Afternoon, everybody. I hope you've had an extra cup of coffee. Yes? Good. Before we proceed, I'd like to make sure that your right hands work. Please raise your right hand, everybody. Excellent. That works. Now, could you please raise your left hand, everybody? Okay, that works too. Excellent. Phenomenal. What we'll try to do today is to be a bit more interactive, meaning your participation will be required. If you don't deliver such participation, there'll be consequences. Right, so what we'll talk about today is crafting a competent pitch. Pitch is something that you already heard Ben mention today. Pitch is a presentation you deliver to other people who haven't heard about your entrepreneurial project. You'd be surprised how few people can actually do that well. There are actually not that many people who can do it reasonably well. So that's the reason why we have this presentation today, is to make sure that you have an idea of what a competent pitch looks like. We'll really talk about the basics. But first, who am I and what I'm doing standing here talking about pitches? So my name is Leo, right there. And the reason why I have so little hair on my head is because I wear too many hats, and they just sort of rubs the hair right off. So the first thing I do is we start up. It's a company I started about 2.5 years ago. Long story to give you a 30-second version. It's a consultancy that advises first-time entrepreneurs, that gives them the confidence they need to start a business, that gives them the knowledge they need to start a reasonably good business, and the network they need to make it an outstanding business. And the way we do it is we crowdsource the efforts from you, the public. And actually, crowdsourcing is something I'll use throughout this presentation. Second thing I do is BetaInvest. BetaInvest, very simply, is we make a list of startups that are looking for money. We make a list of investors who are prepared to invest in these startups, and we put the two together. That simple. I also work for Ben. I help him with the organization of Boost Camp Brussels. So I'm, as Ben refers to me, the role of Brussels. I also do something called Health Startup. It's a long story. If you're curious about startups and healthcare, come see me afterwards. I also do this. It's a bar camp for entrepreneurs. We've had 5 in Belgium. We're working on the 6th now. And last but not least, I'm also one of the founders and organizers of Startup Weekend Brussels. It's single coolest event for startups and people interested in startups in Belgium ever. Seriously, nothing like it. By the way, anybody who's been to Startup Weekend in Brussels here, raise a hand. 1, 2. Okay, 3. Excellent. So tell everybody how fantastic it is, but later. Right, there's two. We'll talk today about two different kinds of pitches. First will be a 30-second pitch. Why 30-second pitch is basically the idea is that you explain what your business is about or is going to be about to somebody in 30 seconds. And there are two good reasons for it. The first reason is that IT guys that I come across are very, very good at thinking about what they're going to do. So they come up with these fantastic ideas, and Roald has been talking about that extensively. It's so very easy to come up with a fantastic product. The difficult part is communicating that product in 30 seconds. So we'll talk a little bit about that, and we'll provide some examples after that. And that's where the crowdsourcing part is. I'm not as bright as Roald and Ben, so I'll need some help with the presentation, so you'll see some presentations from other guys, not just me. So the number one reason for 30-second pitch is so you can communicate clearly what it is that you're doing. And second thing, and this is a real-life situation, this is a photo from Startup Weekend Brussels. It's a very easy-to-enter event, so you can come into that event and take part in it. And this is a photo taken real life a few months ago. That guy is an investor, Boris Leblevenik. That guy is a journalist. He's not just a journalist. He is the editor-in-chief of Data News. So if you are building something interesting that you want to sell to IT guys in Belgium, he's the number one guy to talk to, hands down. It gets better. That guy over there is actually in the room right now. I think he left just a second ago. I hope he'll be back before his photo is off the screen. It's Frederick Thibault. He's also a journalist. He also writes for Data News, and he's also an outstanding guy to talk to when you have something new to sell. It gets better still. That young lady over there is also a journalist, and she works for Transcendance. Am I missing anybody? Oh, yeah. Ben? You're also in that photo. Yes, good. So this is a very real event with very real people where you can walk in very easily and talk to them. The problem is there's also about 100 other people there than you. So you only have 30 seconds to explain what it is that you do to a guy who can put a couple of tens of thousands of euros into your business or the guy who can put you on the front page of Data News. A very real situation. And this is not the only example. Beta Group. Everybody who knows Beta Group, please raise your right hand. All right. Cool. Last Beta Group number 30, buddy of mine, Alex, he's actually going through Bootcamp. He has a pretty cool mobile app. I saw passing by an investor by the name Michael, and I said, Alex, let's go. I grabbed him by the hand. I brought him to Michael, said, Michael, this is Alex, my good friend. Alex, this is Michael. 30-second pitch, please. 30-second pitch. Two-hour meeting a few days later. And yeah, we'll see where things develop, but at least he got an opportunity to speak to a guy who can help him, not just with money, but with advice and knowledge and network, etc. But yeah, three simple rules for making a competent 30-second pitch. Rule number one, short words everybody knows. You'd be surprised how difficult it is to get tickets to do that. Second thing, no vague words, because everybody knows the word platform. Not everybody knows what it means, and I'll get back to that in a couple of minutes. And third, zero fluff. You really have 30 seconds. Everything you say should be really, really, really polished. If there is one thing you learned by heart, that's your 30-second pitch. We'll see a couple of examples later. But here's what should be in it. What it is, whose problem it solves, what problem it solves, and what is the secret ingredient? How are you different from everybody else? These are really the four core things. To give you an example, me, I'm making a smartphone app which will help engineering students find cheap secondhand books because I've built a way to recruit people who buy, who want to sell their secondhand books in mass and very cheaply. Everybody who understood me, please raise your right hand. Fantastic. So you see, it's simple to actually do once you've put a little bit of effort into it. We'll hear a couple more examples when we get back to that, but that's a 30-second pitch. That's simple. Yeah, how is the 5-minute pitch different? Well, yeah, that's sort of an obvious one. I'm sure you figured that one out by yourself. But the big difference is the objective. The objective for the 30-second pitch is to get attention. You have 30 seconds to make sure that this guy wants to talk to you later. This guy or this girl, not to be sexist. With the 5-minute pitch, you want to make sure that while the guys are listening to you, they're listening to you, not thinking, but hang on, this makes no sense, right? Roll talk about business models. I'll talk to that about that in a second. Yeah. Before I continue, one very important thing. This is a recipe for a normal, competent pitch. If you want to make an awesome pitch, if you want to make an outstanding pitch, you have to do something completely different. To give an example, this was also from Beta Group. This is one of the guys from GetU. They've been in the presentation game for quite a while, so they do things a little bit differently. So as the gentleman was delivering his presentation, he then proceeded to strip. And that's what he was wearing underneath. Well, he then proceeded to strip further. So, yes, he also was wearing the matching bottoms. I'm not joking. I do have photos. They're a little bit not safe for work. It's okay to smile, yes. Right. So the skeleton of the 5-minute pitch is very, very, very simple, right? It's basically some parts are the same. So what problem you're solving, market you're addressing, the solution, so that's where the solution is explained in a bit more detail. The business model, where you are today, and fundamentally one thing that entrepreneurs tend to forget, the first time entrepreneurs tend to forget, is what do you want from the audience, right? To put a bit more meat on the bones, The first thing you have to do before you craft your five-minute pitch is you have to think about the audience. Why? Well, that's the first question. You'll see one of the pitches that requires a bit of specific knowledge. So the pitch that will deliver first a little bit of that knowledge, and then you'll see why it's an interesting product, right? So if your audience is familiar with the product, for example, if I'm doing something with car sharing, right? Thanks, Roland, for the brilliant example with Django. A lot of people here have cars, I presume. You got here by car. We could probably all use something, so we're sort of familiar with the problem. On the other hand, if the example Mitchell will talk about lung disease, I have no idea. So before he explains to me why his business is so bloody cool, he'll have to explain to me why. He'll have to explain to me some basics of the lung disease, and then I'll know why it is. By the way, if you do have questions, I don't have enough material for an hour and a half presentation here, so questions are welcome. It's a crowdsourcing exercise. All clear on this? Yeah? Okay, zero reaction. Fantastic. Back to the platform. I know I have a thing about the platform. Like, I talk to IT guys a lot. I'm a marketing guy by trade. Maybe that's why. Maybe I'm just not bright enough. But every time somebody says a platform, I go, this kind of platform? Or is it this kind of platform? To me, it's really not clear. I do have an MBA. I do have a degree in my chosen field, marketing. But when an IT guy says platform, my eyes glaze over automatically, instantly. And that said, there are a couple of guys here in this room who can confirm that I'm a fairly useful person to talk to if you're a startup. Right, so you need to make sure that I understand what you're talking about. Right, enough about platforms. Another useful thing is to use symbols that are sort of firmly entrenched in our collective brain. And this is something referred to in literature as the Hollywood cinema pitch. Imagine this. Depending on how wild your imagination is, you can craft some pretty interesting things based on it's Kill Bill meets Wizard of Oz. Right? Whatever it is, first of all, I got your attention because you sort of see where I'm going with it, right? And second, I allow you to fill in all the blanks. So if I say my product does something that is like Dropbox with, what would be different than files? With books. No idea. With cars. Fantastic. Then you go, okay. So there's got to be some sort of sharing product somewhere in there. But it's a very useful thing, so it's a very good idea to, when you're doing your pitch, to sort of think through the movie analogy and to sort of build it in there somewhere. It really does get your point across. Second thing you have to do, you have to prove, when you start talking about your solution, you have to prove that your solution works. So when I talk about my website, well, I started talking about my website before I had a website. I would get blank looks. Now I say, well, I have a website, you can go and have a look at it. There is 1,219 users who are actually going there on a regular basis and doing something on it. That is proof that I have something. If you say, I will build a fantastic website, the interest of people who listen to you immediately goes down. Right? Show something concrete. You and your team are definitely a part of the solution. If I say, I'm doing this on my own, interest from the audience usually goes down. If I say, well, I'm working on this with three other guys, and you don't have to explain on your slides who these guys are, what they do in every detail. Just put some photos and say, this guy knows that, that guy is this, this guy is in India, this guy is in Denmark, moving to India. You don't have to explain a lot. Just prove that there is more than one person working with you on this. It helps if the photos are sort of similar, right? I've seen a lot of presentations where the best photos they could find are one from the Christmas party, another one from a... let's say some other beer consuming occasion, etc. It helps if the photos are good. Just sort of a hint. Business models. I know you can spend an hour and a half on business models. You can spend actually a couple of days or weeks or month on business models. But for the purpose of the 5-minute pitch, you don't have to. You have to do two things. First of all, you have to explain very, very clearly who is buying and what it is that they're buying. With Django, they're buying car sharing services, roughly speaking, right? And who is buying? Well, it's a corporate, it's large corporates who have lots of people working for them. They're buying the car sharing service. That's pretty much half of the business model. And second half is this. Are they paying enough to make it a viable business? this is enough to sort of, again, keeping in mind that the first objective of a 5-minute pitch is to keep away the basic questions, keep them out of the way, make sure people focus on your message. This is enough of an answer for the time being. When you have an opportunity to talk for 25 minutes or for 2 hours with a guy or the girl, you'll explain that again. Right. Another thing that people tend to focus on instantly is, okay, so you've described your business model. You've described a little bit your solution. People go, okay, so where are you with this? That's when it's good to explain what your status is. By the way, another photo from Startup Weekend. It is really a fun event.
You should have to do a new one.
Yes, we'll talk about that later, Ben. But we'll do another one. So you don't have to explain every single detail, but you should say, well, do we have just a prototype, or are we actually somewhere where there are people who are paying us to use our thing? That's all you have to say. Again, you don't have to go in depth. You need to make sure that people still want to talk to you after the 5 minutes are over. Right. Last but not least, what do you want from the audience? The sort of the immediately obvious thing is, yeah, money. The not so obvious thing is the second part. For what? I've seen time and time again entrepreneurs come and say, we're looking for 600,000 euro. I know what you can do with 600,000 euro. It's a lot of money. You can do a lot of interesting things with 600,000 euro. I've also seen people waste a lot more than that very, very quickly and with zero result. So if I'm about to put any of my money behind you, I want to know what you're using it for. So just saying I want 600,000 euro is not enough. Just making a point. But there's other things that the audience may be useful for you. The other ways in which the audience can help, it could be contacts, could be advice, could be test users, right? And I think here we'll have at least one of the presenters will want to have some test users, and he will talk about it. Again, not rocket science, exactly. We're cool? We're okay? All right. I'd like to end with one last thing. That's Kurt Vonnegut right over there, one of my most favorite writers of all time. And he said in one of his books, in Bluebeard, he said, how can you tell a good painting from a bad one? Well, you have to look at a million of them. We can't cram a million presentations into this one. It'll be a bit impractical. But we can start with five. So with this, I'd like to pass the word on to Christoph, who'll talk about Alchemio.
Thanks. Hi. This home? Okay. Alchemio is like Evernote meets SlideShare. Try to imagine that. Basically what it is, it's a service, it's a web service that helps you to interact with mobile audiences. So if you're a presenter like me today, you can use it to make use of those mobile devices that people are using instead of them just doing stuff on their own. Because who here in the room has ever given a presentation for which they had to pay themselves something? There must be more. If you've done a presentation, most likely you've paid your transport or something, right? Now, I've done presentations in US, and I've paid 1,000 euro to go there, to hotel costs, flight costs. I know of people that pay 3,000 or 4,000 euro for an opportunity to present in front of an audience. And that's really not uncommon. The thing is that that's not always very effective because it's a lot like e-shops. You know, you've got this funnel thing. You start with 1,000 people at the event, 100 in your session, 50 understand what you're talking about, 20 are actually interested, and 2 talk with you. And that's it. So you just spend 2,000-3,000 euro to talk with 2 people. Might be worth it, but it might be interesting to, you know, increase the game and get a better deal. Especially now, because like today is quite okay, but I often present at tech conferences, and that's kind of where you see the future. And people there, they're like sitting on their laptops, like you've got maybe the attention of a tenth of your crowd. It's crazy. And basically, what's happening is that before you used to have a captive audience, and now it's gone. They're all playing on their mobile phones. And that's a big problem, because you just paid 1,000 euro to get to a conference, and half of the people are not even listening. Some people say, like, turn off your mobile devices, close your TV screens, turn off those computers. I think that's a bad idea because first of all, you're alienating your audience. People are getting like, he makes me close down my device. And second, if you're then not really interesting, you really will lose them. And they'll open their device again and they won't listen to you at all anymore. What we instead suggest is that you should embrace mobile. You should use it to further your own objectives and to get people to do what you want them to do. And for that, we've got 4+1 tools. First tool is a tool to collect information. We did some research into the way that people make presentations and the common denominator, there's a lot of different ways. Some people do it on paper, some in Word documents, some in PowerPoint directly. But the common denominator is that they build an outline and they write down their basic ideas and then they start further researching it. And we build a tool that makes it easy to do that and to also reuse the topics you've already described. So if you already have some data from a former presentation, you can reuse it. Second tool is a tool to distill information. I don't know if you've realized, but a lot of time you're spending just rewriting the same crap over and over again. Like you're writing it in Word, you're writing it in PowerPoint, you're writing a slightly different version in Word, and then you're like copy-pasting and doing and stuff. What we did, we built a system where you can extract information that you've already have in Word or in PowerPoint or whatever, and bring it in our tool, and then using a highlighter, say what are the bullet points that you want to include in your slides. Third is call to actions. Now, this one doesn't do anything yet. This is a mock-up. There's a real one further down. Basically, what we want to enable you, our presenters, is to, for example, to let people to schedule a meeting. I'm at this conference. I'm here for another 2 hours. Meet me before I leave back home. Could save you a ton of money and could get you in front of more people that are interested. And fourth, we take all this information, we take these call to actions, and we turn them into PowerPoints, but also a mobile website, also Word documents, and a bunch of other formats. And that's the tools, that's the ones that you're working with. But there's one last really important aspect to our platform, and that's this. Basically what we do, presentation per presentation, you're building your exobrain. You're building a set of topics that you've ever discussed before and that become available to you to reuse. But not only to reuse, but because if you're talking to a non-technical audience, maybe you're going to adapt your presentation so that it's less technical. Maybe there are some technical people in the room and they're kind of bored and they could go and check through your exobrain and find related topics that are much more technical, that are more adapted to their own use. In short, Alchemio helps you to, get to presentations of the future. Presentations haven't really changed much. They're still pretty much the same as a long time ago. Yes, you can include videos. Yes, you can include media and stuff like that. But if you really look at it, we have this mobile opportunity and nobody's really using it so far. And we believe that with our tool, you can actually do that. And to prove my point, I would like you to take out your mobile phones and scan this barcode. This is our Tweet This call to action slide. It's a QR code that encodes a URL that sends you to our platform that forwards you to Twitter, where you get into a pre-filled form for tweeting this message that's down there. And with that, I would like to finish my pitch. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Christoph. Before we go to my medication, the exercise of right hands, everybody who understood everything that Christoph said. Okay, so you lost only 20-30%.
Okay, that's pretty
cool. Is anybody here interested in actually trying this stuff out? All right.
Okay.
Outstanding. Any questions you'd like to ask, Christoph? Okay.
Yeah. So right. we're still working on the exact business model, but most likely it's going to be a freemium model, where there's an aspect for consumers and for businesses. So that's, for example, the GitHub. So basically the GitHub model, where if you're working in the open and you're a person, it's free. If you want to have a closed version with your corporate logo and stuff, you have to pay for it.
Okay. Now a small question for the guys from Microsoft in the room. Do you guys think this could be something useful for you as organizers of this particular conference? You had, 80-something presentations happening today? Over the past 2 days?
Just 3 days? Think about, you had 80 presentations. How many hours have people spent preparing for that? It's 4 hours at least per presentation. And all that time, you have one finished product. But if you're talking about really being able to reuse it and to rehash it and remesh it, I think there's quite some possibilities. Also, another, I haven't shown this because this is a pitch, but you could use it to make event slides, like a pre-slide and a post-slide with evaluation and things like that. So that's your presenters, you send them a link, they come to your platform, to our platform, they include their presentation with the pre and post slide. So anyway, we'll talk about that later. Okay. With that, Mitchell.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Mitchell Silva. I did a PhD in bioengineering on analyzing cough sounds, and I am a lung patient since 2009. This combination brought me to the idea of starting my medication. My medication is a web tool to enhance self-management for people with respiratory problems. And I will focus on COPD and asthma. Still very strange words, but I'll come back to this now. Now, who of you doesn't smoke? You're very lucky. Because in Belgium, more than 25% of the people smoke, and 1/4 of these people, they develop COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. So it's a huge number. In Belgium, 640,000 of these patients. It's actually the third cause of death in Belgium. Now, on average, these people end up in the hospital twice a year. Because they have lung problems, infections, and this costs the government about 4,000 per patient per year. So you can imagine the cost for government for these 640,000 patients. Now, another big population of people with respiratory problems are asthmatic people. There are about 400,000 of these in Belgium. So in total, I'm targeting an audience of 1 million people. Now, asthma is very acute. It can be linked to activity, it can be linked to climate conditions, to allergies, to food, etc. So it's a totally different approach compared to the COPD, that is a chronic condition. But you can really monitor these conditions to have a better health outcome. So it has been proven in the literature that if you monitor patients with home monitor or self-monitoring, you will have less hospitalizations, so you end up less in the hospital. You will have reduced health costs, medical costs, and you will also increase the quality of life. And why is this? This is because the people that have or practice health monitoring, they will have a much better health outcome. They will prevent themselves to be hospitalized, they'll have less infections, etc. So overall, they will be more happy in life. Now, imagine that we can offer, that we can provide personalized medication to get rid of side effects or to minimize side effects. Imagine that we can provide early warning systems to reduce the number of hospitalizations. And imagine that we can provide risk situations based on cough sounds. You all know if you're sick, you have a certain cough, and this has a certain sound. If you have an infection, your sound will be totally different than if it's just some dust in your throat. So the idea is, can we analyze these things? Now, to come up with this solution, we have to get data. Now, getting data from people, from patients, is not that easy. Look to Google Health. It failed. Why? Because they just expected the people to put in data. But that wasn't enough. So to get data, you have to speak in terms of something that has value for patients. And this is self-management. And this is what my medication wants to offer. It's a self-management tool that is combined of patient education, combined of wellness information, and health management, a daily health record where you can keep track of symptoms and medication. Now, patient education is actually a part where we will give information about their disease. COPD, what is it? Asthma, what is it? What type of asthma? What type of COPD does there exist? How do you recognize conditions? What type of medications do you take? Can you take them with other kind of medications? Wellness information. If you want to live healthy, it's more than just taking medication. You have to change your lifestyle. So what is a healthy living? How much activity do you need? And the last part is actually the most important, the health management system. This is a dashboard where you can fill in your medication consumption. You can fill in your physiological parameters. You can fill in your activities. For example, how much times have you been jogging? How much hours have you been sleeping? You can keep track of your symptoms by using a very simple slider, 0 to 10. So you score, I've been coughing 3 out of 10 today, with 10 very, very strong. You can keep your diary, and you can keep your medical history. Now, this tool is existing now. It's available. So the next thing I would like to do is actually to go further and get some intelligence in there. Here you see, for example, the evolution of medication in the top graph and symptom, coughing or wheezing, sorry, in the lower graph. You see at the end that when you lower the medication, you start wheezing, your lungs start peeping. Now, can we develop algorithms that give you warning signals that something is wrong, that you should go to the doctor? Now, because I did this PhD in cough sound analysis, I would really like to have this feature of the cough-o-meter installed in this website. And this actually should make sure that people have the possibility to cough in their mobile device or on their laptop or whatever. All these sounds, they are stored in the database. As I have medication, I have the symptoms, and I have the cough sounds, I can make algorithms to get some information, crucial information, out of these cough sounds to give them early warnings that they have to be careful for some situations. So my medication improves the quality of life for people with respiratory problems by combining patient education, wellness information, and health management. Now, what I'm actually looking for is a team, because I'm alone on this project now, and I'm looking for partners to go to the pharmaceutical industry to see how can we bring the solution to them to follow COPD patients in phase 4 studies, and also how to target COPD patients directly, also keeping in mind what the business model should be. Are patients prepared to pay, yes or no? In Belgium, we have a very big, we have a healthcare system that actually pays everything for us, so we don't like paying ourselves. So how can we get some useful information to convince government that such a system would be good, for example, or insurers? So these are the kind of people I'm looking for, and I'm very interested if you could have some information, if you can scan the QR code or mail me on this email address. Then we can have contact and see what we can do further. Thank you. Any questions?
Why don't you go to the mutual insurance companies rather than the pharmaceuticals?
Yeah, indeed. So the mutualities, the mutuals, they're also on top of my list. But I am talking now to some people of the RESIF, because I first have to go to them, and once they are convinced, I can go to the mutualities. So that for sure is something to do. Yeah.
At what the
Okay, so maybe if you can exchange some contact details later. Yeah. Yeah, indeed. These are actually also looking for the right people there, so it can be interesting to exchange that as well. Thank you.
All right. Cool. Raise right hand if you understood everything that Mitchell explained to you. Excellent. Now please raise left hand if you think that there is a huge market for his product. Left hander, left. Okay. All right.
Okay, thank you.
Cool. Next. Right. Sybil.
Hi, I'm Christoph, and this is Sybil. Software companies and departments have one main strategic resource, their developer. But the identification and the management of their expertise raise a lot of questions, such as how to find a developer with the right expertise to help, how to identify the developer skills to be sure is the right person to do a job, how to pick the right people to make a team for your next project, how to identify the only developers that know a unique and critical knowledge in your company. Enter Sybil, a skill profile search engine. For instance, if I'm looking for an expert onto the OpenID Ruby library, I can type my query into Sybil. As a result, I obtain a list of persons with the right expertise and the project where they use it. Among them is Jose Valim, who used it quite recently. We can look at his profile and see, for instance, what his other skills. Sybil analyzes the code produced by each developer in your company and automatically builds the profile without compromising confidentiality and privacy. Sybil benefits all the functions in the team, allowing developers to gain time or they value their skills, allowing project managers to build team according to the skills of their people, or to identify the only people that know a critical knowledge. The team behind Sybil is Martin and myself. We have strong background in software engineering with more than 10 years of experience. We target the application development software market with a global revenue of $7 billion. We especially reach a new sector thanks to reduced cost and new features, since we bring human resource management to application development software market. Indeed, compared with competitors, Sybil has very specific advantages: objectivity and efficiency with automation, reinforcement of the P2P relation, centered on the person, and is totally dedicated to the IT development. Here, a quick overview of our next 6 months. At the end of this month, we launch a public version of Sybil dedicated to key open source projects and give the result for free in order to create awareness about Sybil, to collect feedbacks, and demonstrate its capabilities. This version is currently tested in a closed beta. After having taken contact with several Belgian software companies that are interested in a corporate version of Sybil, we are currently validating the product with them. And one of them is interested to be an early adopter. Thanks to those validation and testimonials, we aim at closing our first sale by June. Here's some big numbers. Has sometimes his hasket. So the product is sold to for a starting price of 2,500 euro per month to CTO of software company with at least 20 developer. To give you an idea of the whole industry size, there are at least 50K of them in US and Europe alone. But first, we target the French and Belgian software companies of medium size. It allows us to break even after 21 months and with 100 customers and reach an EBITDA of 3 million euros after 3 years. So what I'm looking for and what I ask you, we're looking for software companies that could be interested into Sibyl. So if you know some of them and that you can introduce us to them, please tell me after the session. I will be very interested to exchange contact. Our vision is the construction of a global expert community beyond the company's boundaries in order to make the IT sector a better place for its employees, but also for its customers. Thank you.
Any questions? It was that clear? I take it yes. Go ahead.
What kind of software is this?
Sorry, I didn't hear you.
What kind of software? Is it the application? How is it? Is it a public website?
Okay. It's a website, but because we target companies, it's a website that will be installed inside the infrastructure of the company. And behind this website, there are several services that will crawling all the source code that developer produce in order to build the profile.
Where do you get the data from?
Is it a certain provider you're targeting, or do you support already Git, Mercurial?
So we will connect to repositories, and we have several connectors to crawl those repositories and see what are the change in the source code that the developer made. Yes? We don't target soft skills. We only target hard skills because, it's another matter. So for the moment, it's an important matter, and I think we can complementary of this of the evaluation of soft skills. And when you hear people from human resource manager, usually they have some kind of program to evaluate the soft skill, but to evaluate the effective knowledge and skills, hard skills that that developer have, it's a very, very difficult matter because you need a kind of peer review system, and sometimes it's embed some subjectivity, or you don't have the knowledge to evaluate that because you are a human resource manager. So that's why we only focus on the problem of identifying hard skill. Yeah?
So how do you analyze which code is good and which code is bad?
First of all, the first goal is to identify the knowledge that a developer uses. After that, it's clear that it could be interesting to evaluate the level of knowledge, the level of the skills that developer needs to produce this code. And by doing so, you have to analyze the quality. And in fact, there are several products that allow you to analyze statistically the quality of the code that is produced according to some standards, or some culture that you have in your company. So we can take those information from those tools in order to add some evaluation on the top of the identification. It's a possibility.
Okay. Well, if you have any more questions, Christoph, I'm sure we'll be here after the workshop is over. One question to you guys. Who here works for a software company with more than 20 developers in it? Would you like to tell your bosses about this product? Raise a hand, please. Okay, that guy. Excellent. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Yes, it's your slide, Jean.
Yeah,
you go for it.
Oh, good. Hi, everybody. My name is Jean Saval. My photo is here. And the two other guys are my colleagues. I'm a computer scientist, and I work in the university with those other guys. And we usually do a science, which is finding fun problems to solve. Among the problems we have started to look at, it's a very, very, very interesting problem because it's very widespread. It's a problem of configuration. Here you have a product line. You probably recognize that product line. So it's basically the same code, but with different parts and different options that are targeted to different markets. And so it's produced as a product line, which is a set of products that is managed at the same time by the company. And so this configuration shows up in the interface of the software itself. So here you have a, well, I know it's not the most beautiful configuration screens you've probably seen, but so it shows up inside the software. The thing is, you also find that kind of problem, that kind of behavior in completely different software. For example, here you have a chocolate configurator. So it's a website, and you can actually customize your own chocolate bar. So it's a very common and widespread problem. You can also find it, for example, in a real application. Here it's a car configurator. And of course, you not only have technical aspects, but you also have marketing aspects to it. And of course, the business impact of this configurator can be huge. So the problem here we are focusing on is the interactive configuration. So basically, it's a bunch of options that are usually structured in some kind of tree, and people can select or deselect options. And of course, we want to track not only the options, but also the constraints that exist between those options. And we want to do it live to provide live feedback to the user as to, are those two options compatible, or does it make sense? So that's the type of problem we want to tackle. And the thing is, usually this thing is done completely ad hoc. I mean, people just code it, and when they add a new option, they just add it inside the code. But that's not a very efficient way to do it. We propose a better way, I would say, a more structured and a more automatic way. So we start from the code, eventually, if there is the documentation, even the graphical user interface itself. And with a bunch of tools and methods we have developed, we extract the configuration constraints and information that is in this code. And we have developed a language that is called TVL. So it's a viability language. So it enables you to declare what options goes with what. And so with this TVL language, the good thing is that you can then produce automatically a configuration engine that will check live. I mean, as you configure the product, it will check the different combination of options the user is actually selecting. We can also produce a configuration interface, at least an abstract one, that a designer, for example, can integrate inside his own configurator. And you get something, well, this one is ugly, but this is a prototype. Okay, so bear with me. You have a bunch of things you can select. And the good thing here, of course, it's not dynamic, it's a slide. But you have to trust me here. When you click something, actually, other options are selected or deselected automatically. And it's done on the fly and verified by the machine. And so the good thing here is that your program actually doesn't have to write the code. So you just declare the different constraints you have, and the magic happens. So here is a more technical slide. I hope I'm not bothering you with that. So our platform, sorry, our platform basically just has two main parts. We have a design API that helps the developer to develop its configuration engine, and we have a runtime API that actually performs the live configuration feedback that we want to provide. And behind that, we have a configuration engine. It's developed, it runs. And on the bottom here, we have some kind of nifty solver technology that can use different solver off-the-shelf technologies we can find, including, for example, OpenSMT or Z3. Z3 is actually a Microsoft product. It's very nice. So our products, what we want to sell off of that, four things, basically. First, of course, consulting, helping people deal with increasing complexity inside their own code. Of course, we can then sell them license of software. We can even develop for them. Why not? And we can provide software as a service for configuration. And that's pretty much it. What I want now from this talk, of course, it's more of some kind of customer validation here. So we have a nice... we're scientists, so we're not business people. So we do nice solutions to nice problems, and we hope it's original enough. But we are not sure that people have this actual problem or desire this solution enough to warrant a company. So if you think you have that kind of problem, and if you think our technology could help you, please contact. Thanks.
Right, so my eyes glazed over when he mentioned platform, and then when Germain said solution, I almost fell comatose.
Oh, sorry.
But I'm sure you guys got everything of that, right? Everybody who understood the entirety of the presentation, please raise a hand. Awesome.
Not that bad.
Who thinks it's something useful for their company?
For our community.
Ah.
Aha. Okay, interesting for your community. Raise a hand. Okay, one. For the company, another hand. Okay. Interesting
good,
feedback.
Good. Yeah.
Useful
Thank you.
Feedback. Thanks very much. Any questions? Okay. It was
am I scaring them or something? Maybe. No. Okay. So no question. That's good. Thank you.
Are you using semantic reasoning or how are you doing it?
Yes. Yes, we do that. Yeah. It's Boolean logics, basically, underneath, with a few additions. But, yeah, it's calculus. It's science, but it's okay. It works. I mean, it's we don't actually cure people, but we cure software illnesses, which is kind of thing.
All right. Cool. Thanks so much, Germain. A small intermission while we're adding the last presentation to the batch, and when we're up next. Any questions up to this point on the whole pitching thing? Now that you've seen four, you're about to see the fifth one. All clear? You see why it's useful, why it's how it works? Okay. All clear then. PowerPoint magic. It gets complicated. It's well worth a photo. Excellent. Straight to Facebook. How many combined years of education are there? I'm just wondering. Technical knowledge, programming skills. possibly more. All right, anybody wants to try to do their own 30-second pitch? Any entrepreneurs in the room? All right, would you like to do a pitch? No? Oh, come on. No.
If it doesn't work, we have to close.
Well, we can always plug in the evil.
Yeah, as we can see, it's not enough to have a good presentation. It also should be ready to work. So I propose to give them one more minute, and then life may be fair or unfair if they don't do it. Yeah, I will be very sorry. Now, what do we learn out of this kind of presentation? I have seen the trajectory of many, many of them. It's good to have a great idea. It's also wonderful, of course, to be able to talk about it in a 30-second pitch, as Leo mentioned it, in a 5 minutes pitch with true call to action behind. If you like this kind of thing, and if you seem to create your own company, there is one place in Belgium where you absolutely should go. This is to the Beta Group. I suppose many of you know or hear about that. And the Beta Group is a place where about every month, 5 startups present themselves in 5 minutes. So it's a great place to see example of presentation. They are quite representative of the level of maturity and the level of presentation you can see in Belgium. I do not say that because they are here. But I can tell you the presentation we have seen today are, let's say, above the average level you can see in startup world in general. But as they are our guests, I will not say it myself. And make your own opinion by going and seeing investors' presentation somewhere else. But I think it gives a good idea. There is a lot of competition. It works or not? There is a lot of competition among the startup, also chasing for money. And being able to compare your startup with other startups, it's also a good indicator, a good benchmark of where you are. So I really invite you to go to stuff like Beta Group, to go and see pitch, to take the time to pitch, etc. Do you want to do a blind exercise and make your presentation without slide, which is beautiful because it will talk about a visual product? This stuff is about clicking on video. So think about it for a while. And this is the hard life of an entrepreneur. I wish you luck.
Okay, thank you. And, well, my apologies, the PowerPoint, it's my fault. Anyway, it doesn't work. So what are we here to present? My name is William Simons. I'm the manager of Testimonial TV. Peter Mays is the manager of Zentric. If you have any questions afterwards, feel free to contact us. So the product that we want to introduce is about clickable video. Who's familiar with that term, clickable video? Okay, I see a couple of hands. Okay, let's see if that presentation corresponds with what you have in mind. Well, what we have now is we have online video, and very often people think like, okay, this is interesting. This is an item that I want to find out more about, or where can I buy this? At this time, you can't do that. So there's the static video in a dynamic environment. The same thing goes for, let's take the example of charities, the Red Cross or Elevelevelef or all those charity organizations. They send out online video every so often. So they appeal to your emotions and they ask for money. They ask like, okay, donate €30, €50, whatever. So you get to see that video, what do you have to do then as a viewer? You have to memorize it or you write it down. The next time you're in your online bank, okay, I had to write over 30 or 50 euro. So there's a huge missed opportunity for those charity organizations. And it would be very interesting to entice people to pay directly from the video. Okay, so there's plenty of companies who spend huge amounts of money on advertising and on branding. Take H&M, for example, who pays an enormous amount to David Beckham to appear in their videos, but they cannot monetize their videos. So it's branding, but there's no return on that investment. So, and that's where we want to make the difference. What we come here to present, without actually being able to show it, is clickable video. So it's interactive video where we have made hotspots in the video, items that you can click on, and that will bring you straight to that web shop. For example, you want to buy this vest, okay? You click on that vest, and that will bring you directly to that web shop. Okay, so that is one application. Another application is if the company wants to get your email address. Okay, so for example, you play a little game online with that video. At the end, when the video is over, they ask you for your email address. Okay, so that is a system called clickable video that we introduce now. So how does it work? We need the video, preferably HD, then we upload it to our server, and manually we will add all those hotspots, and we will say, okay, this hotspot has to go to that specific page. Once that is done, you can stream it to any device, and it will also make the switch from Flash to HTML5, so it's viewable on 99% of all devices. So you can see it on your iPad, and it will be clickable as well. The next interesting feature of clickable video is that you can share it via social media. So in the video, there is a link, and you can share that on Facebook, you can tweet it, you can put it on Google+, and it will retain its interactivity. So it's no longer necessary to have that video sitting in your website. Okay, you can release it, you can spread it as much as you like. There's a proof of concept abroad. There are some big brands who have used this already, because we have some colleagues, some people who are doing this in Anglo-Saxon countries, but we're here first in Belgium to introduce this. The proof of concept is that there's a very high click-through ratio, so if people participate in interactive video, is that they retain the brand or the product a lot better than when they just sit back and look at the video. So the branding is a lot stronger, plus of course you have the option to monetize your video. So where are we right now? Well, the product is ready. We're ready to roll. We can serve clients. We're looking for exposure. We want to spread the word that clickable video is out there and it's available. And, who are we? It's a collaboration between myself. I'm the manager of Testimonial TV. We produce the content, so we shoot the video, we produce the video. And Peter Mays, who's in charge of the technical side, who maintains the platform. So his company is called Zentric. So it's basically a collaboration between two companies. But for clients, it has to be a one-stop shop. So there are live videos that you can see. Go to testimonialtv.com. I don't know if there's a one on Zentric already. Okay, but there will be in a short time. So you can see it for yourself, how it works. You're all invited if you want more information. Yeah, talk to us. We're available. Thank you.
Right. Super. Last exercise of right hands. How many of you guys understood very clearly what Wim was talking about despite the visuals? So fantastic. Well done. Very well done. Any questions from your side?
Can you reconfigure existing videos?
Yes. Yeah, we just upload it and you say, okay, we want this to go there, make that a hotspot, and okay, we'll make it clickable. Yeah. Yeah, you need a certain amount of frames because you need the time to go there, and yeah, but I mean, and we can also move around with items in the video, so it doesn't have to be a static thing. No. No. At this time, the engineers do that. So the clever people who made the platform, they will do that manually. But the intention is there that there will be a DIY platform, so that it's out there, that it's available, and that you can upload the videos yourself and make them clickable.
Right. I think that's about it. Thank you guys very much for your attention. If you have any questions, Ben. Ben is around.
Sorry, say again?
Just a mouse over that's happening something, showing something when you go
yeah.
over.
Yeah, 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 yeah. No, it's available. We can visualize it, so we can put a marker, a visual marker, a cross or a square or whatever, think of any form. But it's also possible that you move your mouse over there and then it will stop and then it will click over. You can, I mean, there's a sample now. I can't show it, but it's amazing. People who see it, I really think it's amazing. It's made for lingerie, and you can buy straight from the video. So you say it's A, B, C, and then 70, 75, 80, whatever size, and okay, you buy straight from the video, and it's up. It's in your shop. It's in the bag, basically.
Right. We've got to close this workshop up. So thanks very much for the attention. We'll stick around. All of us, all the startups that presented, Ben and myself will be around. So if you have any questions about any of the startups, if you have any questions about pitching in general, about Boost Camp, of course, in Brussels, in Mons, and soon in Flanders, we're going to stick around, so do not hesitate to come and ask questions. Thank you.